fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Hi, I'm Pat McAfee, and I can't wait to go across the pond to listen to Across the Pod, fresh out of Wales. Special stuff. Cheers.
Hello, everyone. Andy here, and here's what you can look forward to in today's episode. In today's episode, in our final episode of the series, I was joined by Luke Campbell and Steve McGuinness as we review Super Bowl 60. Steve discusses the Vikings' decision not to keep on Sam Darnold for this season.
I don't think there's ever been a 14-win quarterback who's then been dumped by his team after that season.
Luke discusses the defensive performances in the game.
I think if you like defenses, then it was a fantastic Super Bowl.
And I discuss how the Patriots can be proud of their season despite the loss, and we go through our off-season season predictions.
Season now, look back on a lot of fondness. They actually became the first team in history who originated from the American Football League to reach 600 lifetime wins.
Hope you all enjoy.
Right, boys.
Oh, I knew it was coming here.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Across the Pod NFL podcast. I am, as ever, your host today, Andy Davis, and this is the episode where we review Super Bowl 60. And with me today, I've got two guests that are familiar to the show and familiar to our end of season specials. This is, of course, the last episode of the series. Back with me today, first of all, is Chicago Bears fan all the way from Australia, Luke Campbell. Luke, good to have you back on.
Hey, mate, how are you? Or yeah. Good day, even, or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, all is well. The jet lag is well and truly a thing. It's been a struggle since I got back. We are recording this on Thursday. So, yeah, taking a couple of days extra to record this for that reason. I am still knackered, but we roll on, we move on. And what was a great week. And, of course, those of you would have seen all the socials, all the content I've done. Yeah, thanks to everyone who shared it and liked it. And, yeah, do feel free to have a look at that if you haven't already. Our second guest is another fan returning to the show, a fan of last season's champions. Back on the show is Eagles fan Steve McGuinness. Steve, good to have you back on.
It's good to be back, Andy. And, you know, with the solidarity with the bird teams, that was a great Super Bowl.
I mean, I disagree that it was a good Super Bowl. That's probably one of the worst I've watched. Yeah, it wasn't great. And yeah, it wasn't great. But in the end, one team won't mind that at all. The Seahawks, they won't mind as they ended up victorious with their second Super Bowl in franchise history as they beat the New England Patriots by a score of 29-13. Sam Darnold getting his first Super Bowl just a few years after being traded by the Jets and also released by the Panthers. And also, it's their avenging their Super Bowl 49 loss. Of course, the infamous Malcolm Butler interception. A play that haunted his team for a lot of years. But now they've got their revenge and they have a Super Bowl. And Kenneth Walker also getting Super Bowl MVP. Yeah, if I'm honest, I'll get my thoughts first. It wasn't a great Super Bowl. Now, of course, not every Super Bowl can be good. So, you know, I'm not... You know, some people are getting annoyed. Oh, it's another bland Super Bowl. It's another one-sided affair. But, you know, we got lucky with the Falcons, Pats, and then Pats, Eagles a year later. That, you know, in this goes for many sports. I don't believe any sport has a good final every year. Whether it's, you know, Champions League finals, World Cup finals, Wimbledon finals, even something like Gaelic football finals, you know, F1 seasons. You know, not every year can be great. So you know, it's just one of those things. You know, we will get a good one again. I'm sure of it. We will get a good Super Bowl again in terms of one that goes down to overtime or one that simply goes down to the final minute. So yeah, didn't think it was a great game. I thought the Seahawks overall were by far the better team, I think, if I'm honest. There was one point where it was looking like it was going to be a Super Bowl where no one scores a touchdown, one team doesn't score, and all the points are scored by a kicker. So, yeah, there was one point where I was really rooting for Jason Myers to get that MVP. I thought at one point, you know, he was looking like he'd get MVP, I thought, until Barner's touchdown. But, you know, yeah, it wasn't a great game, but, you know, these are just how it rolls sometimes. Luke, what was your thoughts on the game?
I think if you like defences, then it was a fantastic Super Bowl. Because honestly, I thought the Seahawks were absolutely tremendous, and I just thought that they never gave Drake May a minute's peace during the whole game. I thought it was really interesting to see the game plan. I thought that the Hawks did a really good job of just running the ball. You knew exactly what they were going to do, what their identity was going to be. It was an enjoyable game, quite intense, and I mean, I think I take people's point that it wasn't the best one ever, but it was still interesting from a tactical point of view from both sides and the adjustments that they made and stuff. But I thought it was really interesting. I do think that Sam Darnold deserves a huge amount of credit for getting as far as he has. And we'll talk about this a little bit later, but, you know, for a long while time, we were all sort of like, Sam Darnold's actually a quarterback? But really, it was a good game, very, very intense, and you know, lots of really interesting defensive play. But I thought it was great, actually. I really enjoyed it, even if it wasn't, you know, the score fest in terms of touchdowns that we thought it might be. But yeah, it was good, and the right result at the end of the day, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm speaking from a Dolphins fan who, you know, has been, you know, become a Dolphins fan the last 15 years, you know, and sort of grown to hate the Patriots. And I think a lot of even non-AFC East fan teams, you know, are rooting against the Patriots and don't like them because they always won under Brady. But I think even taking that aside, I think the fact that you've got one team that hasn't won it since 2019 and one hasn't won it since 2014 or 13, you know, I think for that reason, I think, you know, if the team hasn't won it the longest out of the two, I think most people would root for that. And I think as well, the Patriots, that they won enough. They've won six. Seahawks only won one. I think, you know, Sam Darnold, I think, you know, everyone, quite a lot were rooting for that story, probably more than Drake May, even though Drake May's story was really good, and Mike Vrabel's story as well. And, you know, I'm sure there were Titans fans all around celebrating that their former head coach didn't win a Super Bowl after leaving. But Vikings fans can be a bit more annoyed that they let go of that, of their starting quarterback a year before he won a Super Bowl. With a different team. Steve, your take on the game?
Yeah, I mean, we were watching it down at the pub, and there was about 35, 40 people in there, and I think it's probably about 80% fans. You know, and everyone's there. It's like fans of every team. They've all got their own jerseys on, etc. But it was just, with the exception of the Patriots fans in the corner, who were quiet the whole game, pretty much the entire pub was rooting for the Seahawks. And I think I agree with you. It's the whole kind of the Patriots have been so successful for so long, and people kind of who've watched the game for a while, there's that kind of success fatigue that you get. It's like when a team wins again and again and again, you just grow to dislike them. It's not a rational thing, but it's one of those, oh, Patriots have won our Super Bowl. Oh, Patriots won our Super Bowl. Over time, that becomes ingrained in a lot of people and a lot of fans, especially if your team's not winning. We did. I mean, the pub was overwhelmingly in favour of Jason Myers getting the MVP. I think it was 15-3 at one point, or 18-3. And we were just, everyone was like, Myers, right the way through the pub. And it was like, it's getting echoed. I'm in agreement that the defence... we'll talk in more detail about defense later, but you know, offense wins games, defense wins championships, and that defense was stout. It was solid from the outset. It made sure that the one thing, because once you talk about May, the one thing that's really carried the Patriots is that Vrabel has redefined the run game. And Ramondre Stevenson and Trevion Henderson this season have kind of, they both run the rock successfully. And when the when they run well, the Pats win. And the three games you watched them this season where they've lost, there hasn't been a great run game. Seattle keyed on that very early. And that defense was, it was solid, it was well laid out. And I think, let's say that, after that first half, it was very reminiscent of last year when I was watching the Eagles game. And it was just, it was a defense that was keyed on the strengths of the opposition. It was another defense that just looked, it looked as though it was susceptible to just that one or two big plays, which, you know, which in case of Kenneth Walker, two great breakout runs. I think there's one in particular I remember is going to 35, 40 yards when he cut to the outside. And I think things like that can break the confidence of a defense when you've bottled someone up for so long and then suddenly he just makes that one play, that one first down, that one big chunk play that kind of makes you say, we missed that. We need to be more careful next time, and you maybe overcompensate and then the gaps start to appear.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll get on to defense now, but I was talking about them, but I think going back to the Seahawks-Patriots element, I think there's an element that I think a lot of Seahawks fans were feeling like this was their moment. They felt like they won't get a better chance to win one. And I think for a lot of Patriots fans, there's a lot of feeling before the game, and there's been a lot of sort of sentiment afterwards, people thinking, well, we were meant to be here. And I think, you know, there's already been a thing where I think the Seahawks were 66-1 to win a Super Bowl and the Patriots were 80-1. So both teams were quite unfancy, but I think the Seahawks felt like, I think a lot of fans were saying on social media that they felt like this was their time. All the stars were alive, but I think a lot of Patriots fans have said it afterwards a lot as well, that, you know, we didn't expect to be where we were. To get where we were after a 4-1 season, it is great in itself. Even though I do think it was the easiest ever route to the Super Bowl, and I don't believe they'll get back in the next 5 years. But at the same time, Drake May has shown something this year. I think they can go away from this and think, right, we've got a future. We've got a quarterback under centre. I think, yeah, it was just one of those days. I think the postseason, we saw a lot of signs of it. I think we saw a lot of O-line causing problems. And every game, you know, leading up to the Super Bowl, whether it's Chargers, whether it's Texans, the defense causing problems. But obviously, in the end, the Seahawks offense did enough, unlike the Broncos, unlike the Chargers and the Texans. On that defense, I mean, the stats were really impressive from the defense. I mean, 10 tackles from Ernest Jones in this game. Devin Witherspoon had a sack, and it was an amazing play in a game where obviously he did end up causing the Wosu to get the pick six, not pick six, the fumble recovery for a touchdown. They kind of both just really eased through that O-line for the Patriots and got to him. I thought Witherspoon was fantastic once again. Byron Murphy got two sacks, also got a fumble recovery. Derek Hall got two touchdowns, forced fumble. Julian Love, interception. Yeah, the Seahawks defense, who's been electric all year, they've earned the nickname of the dark side, and they've sort of earned themselves their own nickname and not sort of been under the shadows of the Legion of Boom. And I thought, yeah, the Seahawks defense, really, really cool problems. And I want to ask you guys, really, we've seen a lot of Super Bowls in the past, and Steve, you know full well from last year with your team, where we've seen some great defensive performances. Luke, where do you think that performance ranks amongst the all-time Super Bowls? Because, you know, it was scoreless for a lot of the game, you know, and they never really looked like, they were never behind at any point in the game. It took until either the end, I think it was the end of the third quarter or start of the fourth when Matt Collins scored. You know, there was a point where people thought they were going to get shut out, and the Seahawks, I was there for the post-game stuff, and Williams was saying how they were annoyed that they didn't get, you know, the first ever shutout in history. It was just all round amazing. So, you know, what was your take on, and where do you think that ranks amongst the all-time Super Bowl defensive performances?
Do you know, that's a really interesting question, actually, because I think the fact that they actually did give up a score was the thing that actually knocks them down a little bit. I think if they'd managed to achieve a shutout, then it could arguably have been the top performance. I certainly think it's, of the modern era, maybe top three, I think, possibly even top two, because I thought they were absolutely brilliant, completely flawless all the way through. You know, I think I mentioned before, I just, you couldn't really pick any real faults in their game at all. They didn't give up too many big chunk plays. They pretty much keyed on the run and stopped it, pretty much. So I thought it was really, really outstanding. And you could probably argue of the last 15 years, it's probably been the best defensive performance I can think of. And certainly since, you know, my 85 Bears, really, I think that there probably isn't anyone that's been better. So I would probably rank it in the top two. And I think, obviously, I'm going to go with 85 Bears as the top one of the more modern Super Bowl era. But I stand by that, of course. Otherwise, I'd be thrown out the Bears fan club, let's put it that way. But honestly, the Seahawks were tremendous. And they've been doing it all season. This is not a surprise. They've been doing it the whole season. And I just thought they were awesome all the way through. Like I said, the fact they gave up a score was the only thing that would have been disappointing from their side. And I think probably it was actually, it was probably undeserved from the Patriots because they didn't really do anything throughout the game, really.
Steve, your thoughts, because obviously your Eagles are out there, I think, not just modern history, but I think all-time Super Bowl defensive performances. That certainly for me is up there, certainly in my lifetime watching it. You've obviously watched it longer than me. But where do you think that ranks, that win, in terms of your opinion on the Seahawks defensive performances? Where would you rank that one amongst all-time?
Yeah, I'm going to kind of downgrade it a little bit. I think Luke's given them a little bit more credit than they deserve. I'm going to put them kind of top four, top five. I'm going to put them behind that Bears performance. I'm going to put them behind our performance last year, which you got to remember, almost all the Chiefs' points last year were in garbage time. We ran a defense that only had a three-man rush, and we kept the Chiefs kind of completely flat for three full quarters until we were like 35 points ahead. So I'm going to put that one up there. I'm going to put the Broncos D and that Von Miller Super Bowl. I'm going to put that up in there. So for me, the Seahawks, probably fourth or fifth. And one of the things about this defense, you mentioned earlier, kind of they're calling themselves the dark side. They're stepping out the shadow of the Legion of Boom. I think that nickname is kind of forced upon them. This doesn't feel like that kind of flashy bunch that the Legion of Boom were. This is a bunch of, it's a combination of kind of veterans who've been grinding hard in the league for years. And Aidan Dird, who, by the way, congrats, being the first British coach to win a Super Bowl. They found a guy that can build a system to get the absolute best out of them. There's a great clip, if anyone's seen it, of Leonard Williams talking about the game against, I think it was against the Niners or the Rams in the divisional rounds. And he was talking about how he'd been kind of struggling through the game, and he sat on the sideline, and one of the rookies, Gray Zabel, was talking to him, and he's saying to him, why are you trying to spin here? Why are you trying to go to this side? He says, the B gap is there. You're key on the B gap, and you'll be getting straight through. And it's that great combination of kind of like the veterans who kind of know how to do it, and some rookies who have got great football intelligence, not just kind of big meatheads that can charge at your lines. That kind of balance is where Seattle's defense really, really excels. And I'm really, really pleased to see DeMarcus Lawrence winning a Super Bowl, not just because he was super critical of the Cowboys when he left to join the Seahawks last year. And he did say he would never win a Super Bowl in Dallas. He goes to Seattle and does it in his first season, so fair play to him. But that's the other thing about it. Anyone who watched the game, that defense had togetherness. Every tackle, every play, they were they were together. They were boosting each other. They were pushing each other. They were like in each other's faces going, yes, come on, let's do this. There was a real sense of team, and you've got 52 guys in your roster, right? You have to get them all fighting for each other. And those guys looked like they would literally just run through a brick wall for each other. And that mentality carried that defense. So whilst I don't think it's a top five defense, I think part of that's to do with the fact that was not the greatest offense they were playing against. You can only beat what's put in front of you in terms of the Patriots record. But if you were to say to me, how many of those Patriots offensive players will make the Hall of Fame? Maybe Diggs based on his time in the Vikings, but nobody else there really has that kind of Hall of Fame vibe about them. So I think it's one of those. I think against a stronger offense, I would have rated them higher.
Yeah, I think that's why you look at last year's Super Bowl, in terms of the performance they had, the Eagles, against one of the best quarterbacks of all time in Mahomes. And that's why I view, you think about since Beth, my personal all-time best defensive performances, I think about that Seahawks performance against the Broncos with Peyton Manning. And I think, you know, with Drake May, you know, he was struggling throughout the whole playoffs. And I think, you know, it was a good reason why a lot of people had, you know, the Patriots losing is because of Drake May's struggles and how good the Seahawks team were. And I think it goes down as well to, you know, the drafting that by the Seahawks and the defense they've established through draft picks is amazing. Looking at, you know, the past, I'm looking here in the last few draft picks, since 2022, they've drafted Week Willen, Kobe Bryant, Boy Math, Jerick Reed, Derek Hall, Devon Witherspoon, Byron Murphy, Nick Amonwori, and that's just on a defense. There's so many more offensive players, you know, that have been a big part of this team. I think John Schneider deserves a lot of credit, I think, for that and how he's assembled his defense. And I think, I think, you know, over time, I think he'll probably be forgotten about, maybe. But I think that touchdown from Owosu, where Witherspoon and both come out the block so quickly, he gets the ball and falls into the hands of Owosu, I think that will live in a lot of people's memories. And before we move on to other things in the game, and they're talking about, I'm looking at the biggest blowouts in history. Luke mentioned the Bears in 85. I mean, 46-10. You think about the Niners against the Broncos, which stands as the longest, the biggest margin of victory, 55-10 in Super Bowl 24. And also there was the Washington Denver and also Dallas Buffalo. Dallas beating Buffalo 52-17 in Super Bowl 27, and also Washington beating Denver 42-10 in Super Bowl 22. So, yeah, those ones I think maybe will live in more memory. But I think over time we'll see how it works out. Going on to the Seahawks offense, we've talked a little bit about it before. Sam Darnold is a Super Bowl champion. Of course, we all saw him in Disney World, as well as Kenneth Walker. I'm not sure why he was invited, because he didn't win the award, but it's not my decision. Sam Darnold, I think his story is ridiculously commendable. I think you think about, it just goes to show for me again, I think, you know, situation matters, because there's a reason why the Jets took him third overall. He had a lot of talent in college. Whilst I wasn't his biggest fan going into the NFL, you know, there's a reason why I took him. He had talent. And then, you know, what we saw the first few years of his career, struggles with the Jets, struggle with the Niners. You go to the 49ers, you were backup, which I do believe ultimately that has helped him a lot in what he's done since. He goes to Minnesota, wins 14 games, but has a nightmare in the playoffs. He's seen as, you know, maybe a bridge quarterback, or maybe just a short-term fix in Seattle, and he goes out and wins it all. And, you know, yes, he didn't have the stats of Mahomes or in the past, or, you know, he's not going to be there in top 5, 10, 5, or 10, or 15 best passing seasons by a quarterback, but he's been perfect for his team. He hasn't made mistakes. It's a very well-organized team. You know, great O-line, weapons all around him, defense. He hasn't needed to be the star man, and I think that suits him perfectly. And I think he's done exactly what he needed to do. And he's, you know, he's been, you know, the Rams game especially, that's probably been the best game of his career. Got him to the Super Bowl, and he was, you know, he was fine in the Super Bowl. He wasn't elite, but he didn't need to be. So I think Sam Darnold for me is a tremendous story, and I think it's for a lot of people. I think it's a good lesson for a lot of quarterbacks. You think about Mendoza this year, if he goes into the NFL and struggles with the Raiders, you know, or any other quarterback that struggled, you know, there is a way to come back. There is a way to get back into things. Yeah, it might mean a year off. It might mean a year behind someone or as a backup. But as long as you have, which he seems to have, the right attitude, the work ethic that he's shown, that you can eventually turn around. And I think that is something that I think school kids are gonna learn from. I think that, you know, in years gone by, I think that there's gonna be, you know, 10 years time, there's gonna be school kids playing high school football, and maybe they're struggling at quarterback, and they go, guys, look at Sam Darnold back in 2026, 2025. Look what he's done. Overcome this, overcome that. So Sam Darnold, fair effing play to him. Fair play to him. Luke, now I know you actually. We're gonna go for our predictions later on and reveal the results and who got what and who predicted what. There's been times where you predict him to get comeback player of the year. And, you know, you're someone I know probably more than a lot of people who backed him in his early days in the NFL after a struggle with the Jets. What's your take on his story? Because it must be, you know, for you, just really cool to see.
Do you know what? You've got to give him a huge amount of credit. I think coming back from that sort of start was a testament to, I think, both him as a person, but also I think the fact that other coaches have taken the chance and really developed him. And I think you can see that he has really made a lot of strides himself as a quarterback in terms of, you know, how he plays and stuff. And I thought that he was very, very unfortunate in his early days. You know, he got drafted by a team that were very poor and had terrible coaching. And I think any QB in that situation would be set up for failure, more or less. So I really felt for him. And you know, I think, although there's been a lot of slagging off, and myself included, I have slagged him off on the odd occasion, you know, because what's football without slagging people off a little bit? But he does deserve so much credit. And I think between last year and this year, it's just apparent that he is a good QB. He's never going to be elite. I think he even recognises that himself. But I think if you get the right scheme and you build the right team around him, he's the guy that clearly can get you places. And I think that, you know, the Seahawks made a really good move, and I'm sure the Vikings are kicking themselves. Ha, 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 by the way, Viking fans. Tough noogies, as they say. sorry, I'm too busy laughing at them. I really am. But no, listen, he really, really deserves so much credit. And I think the coaching staff as well deserve a huge amount of credit for building a scheme that really works for him. And building, you know, a supporting cast that is really, really good. Fair play to him. But, you know, really, really great result. And I'm pleased for him as a person, because I think he comes across as a decent guy too. So, you know, I'm really pleased for him.
I mean, yeah, me and you, Luke, have both got this joy of having one of our rival teams looking at a former quarterback winning a Super Bowl. But particularly the Vikings. I mean, Steve, they must feel absolutely sick that they had him in the franchise, you know, at this point, you know, less than 12 months ago. They had him there, and they had a 14-win season. Yes, they didn't win the division, but, you know, they had the most wins for a non-winner of a division in history. So, you know, and they obviously got the players there, and, you know, they go for a quarterback like McCarthy. They put their trust in him, and it hasn't worked out so far for McCarthy. It might work out. You know, I could be wrong in this, but, you know, right now it hasn't worked out, and it just seems crazy to me, the fact they brought him in last year to be the guy to play ahead of McCarthy, to help him learn from him. But of course, being injured, it's basically resetting. So I'm so shocked they didn't just go for it again. And, you know, at the time, it didn't seem too bad because you thought, oh, well, you played bad in the playoffs. But looking at it now, Steve, how it's gone since for both these quarterbacks, both McCarthy and or Nine, as the Vikings like to call him, or Sam Darnold. I mean, how sick must the Vikings fans be feeling right now?
I mean, that's exactly the point. You can, I don't think there's ever been a 14-1 quarterback who's then been dumped by his team after that season. I mean, if you look at that Vikings team last year, one bad playoff game does not say to me, I need to dump the quarterback. Yeah, you had a team there that had all the ingredients to go all the way. It had, you know, aside from, you know, everything else, they were there. That defense, that Brian Flores defense, was amazing last year. You know, the offense won 14 games. They needed to tweak that. They needed to add to it. What they didn't need to do was pull away one of the core building blocks on it, which was a simple, straightforward, you know, no-nonsense game manager, which is what they had in Darnold, right? And which half the teams in the league would kill for, right? I mean, let's be clear on this. Darnold is not Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Baker Mayfield, Lamar Jackson, right? He's not. He's a general that organizes and manages. He's not a 450-yard, 6-touchdown kind of quarterback, right? If you've got a balanced offense, he's the perfect guy to have there, yeah? And what Darnold had in front of him was a really balanced offense. For me, when you've got Charbonnet and Walker, you have one of the best 1-2 punches at running back in the league. But as a friend of ours, as Chris, who's a Broncos fan, will tell you, a friend of ours, the Broncos won a Super Bowl when Peyton Manning could barely turn his neck, right? Yeah. All you need in a situation like that, when you've got the defense and you've got, you know, the core parts of the offense, is a guy who you can put between this right in the center, between the lines, and say, keep it simple, no mistakes, let us take care of the rest. That's exactly what Darnold did in that game, right? He wasn't flashy, he wasn't spectacular. No picks, no fumbles, Just simple, straightforward football. And that is what won the Seahawks the game. Because if your quarterback isn't making any mistakes and your defense is playing at its level, you're going to win games. And, you know, a great example or kind of comparison for me for this is Brock Purdy at the Niners. Now, to me, Brock Purdy is still a game manager. Yeah, he's the highest paid game manager in the league. But I've said to Luke on a number of occasions, the Niners will never win a Super Bowl with Brock Purdy at quarterback because they pay him too much. He's not an elite quarterback, but he's getting elite quarterback money. Darnold is what you want in that situation, right? If the Niners had said, let's drop Purdy and bring in Darnold, I genuinely think the Niners this season would be sitting where the Seahawks are. You need a consistent, simple, straightforward game manager when you've got a great team around him.
You know, well, I don't know.
That's exactly what Darnold is.
Mm.
Well, I remember when he was at the Niners, there was a point in his only off-season training camp where there was a lot of talk on by beat writers and there's a lot of noise going around the camp that he was performing the best out of the lot in that callback room. They had, I think Garoppolo's gone, but they had Purdy, Darnold, and I forget who the third choice was. But there was a lot of
Garoppolo,
noise going around. He was gonna start week one and he was going to be the guy, you know, to play. And obviously that hasn't worked out, obviously, for his benefit. But I think, I think Purdy personally, I know I've given my thoughts. I do think that he is maybe a bit underrated. I don't think he's top five or top 10, but I think he's someone that I would, if they don't want him in the 49ers, I'll happily have him in Miami.
But, I'll give you a take on this. Yeah. And this is the big difference between Darnold and Purdy. Yeah. When you watch the Niners in a big pressure situation, right? Brock Purdy is in what, year four of his contract now. He's making his big money. He still makes the same rookie mistakes he made in year one, right? He hasn't evolved to that level, right? He's improved in terms of he used to be what he could only really throw kind of inside. He couldn't throw deep and outside. He's added that to his game now, but he hasn't the discipline there to say, look, you know, we need a touchdown on this drive. We're 6 points behind. There's a minute and a half left. I need to just keep it simple, keep it straight. Purdy doesn't quite have that mentality yet, but Darnold does, right? And partly that's because the play calling at the Seahawks was superb this season, and the Niners can try and be a bit flashy when they don't need to be. So there's your difference.
I don't know about that, actually, because like we played the Niners this year, right? And it was a total shootout all the way. And in that game, Brock Purdy played amazing, amazing football. And I don't think anybody could argue against that. He made the right decisions. Caleb Williams went toe-to-toe with him, and it was like one of the most amazing games of football I've watched this year. And I thought Purdy was great, and I think he has been great this year. And the thing that's done the Niners in has been their injuries, actually. But I'm not sure I buy that argument completely, Steve. I do get parts of what you're saying, but I think if they didn't believe in Purdy, they wouldn't have paid him. I mean, I think he is a really good QB. And I think he has shown a lot more signs of maturity in the last few years. So I don't totally buy that. But I kind of see some of the points of what you're saying.
To go to what you said, though, is that I think Purdy benefits from the bias of the fact that the Niners drafted him, whereas they picked up Darnold in free agency. I think, like you said, even when Darnold was out playing Purdy, the Niners looked upon Purdy as being our guy. He came in as a rookie. He's in our system. You know, the fans took to him because, you know, he was Mr. Irrelevant, but he stepped up when the other quarterbacks got injured. I've not seen, personally, and I still don't think I have seen elite level play from Purdy. I think he's a good quarterback, but what I want to see is when you've got a really kind of tough, like two great defenses matchup, what I want to see is a game where Purdy just says, I'm going to keep it very simple. I'm going to let the guys around me do the work. Yeah, I want to see that out of him, because if I see that, that's the point at which I'll say he can elevate himself from being a good quarterback to being a great quarterback. At the moment, like you say, in a shootout, he's great, but in a kind of in a tense, tight defensive game, I still don't think he has it.
I'm going to raise two games, which albeit I'm aware is a two-game stretch, but there's two games I thought he did show that in his career. This came in the both playoff wins in the season they made the Super Bowl. divisional round against the Packers. They came back from a massive deficit, and the same thing against the Lions. So I think he has shown it, but I do think injuries have, you know, been an issue. You know, there's been a lot of injuries to star players. But I still have faith, whilst he maybe hasn't shown it in the last couple of years, I think I've seen him in those two games especially show me that he can, but he needs to do it soon, otherwise that becomes irrelevant if you haven't done it for 4 years. But I think I've still got my mind that Lions game especially, the comeback he had against in the conference championship, I thought that for me was potentially one of the best performances of his career. That was really good. But we'll move on to our final talking point, which is about the struggles on offense for the Patriots. Now, we talked about the defensive success of the Seahawks, but let's not forget as well, there were major issues at the O-line, which have been a problem throughout the whole of the playoffs. One stat I want to feed to you guys is that Will Campbell did allow the most pressures in a playoff game since 2018. This was 14 against the Seahawks. And his 29 allowed in the single postseason, in this postseason, is the most in any single postseason in history of the sport, with 29 allowed. And I think, Drake May, it wasn't his day. A couple of interceptions. I mean, there's one pick he made in particular that you can't really blame on the other line. He just threw it to Julian Love, and really, no one was near Julian Love. I mean, whether that was him just being fatigued and sort of looking for a miracle at that point in the game. But I thought there was some real struggles in the game. I mean, there was one point where it was somewhat fairly close. And then that's when the play happened for Witherspoon and Nwosu. And that obviously ended up, you know, hurting them. But I was surprised they didn't use Stevenson more, because they seemed, at the start of the game, that was at the first drive they had, or maybe even the second drive, one of the first drives they had, Stevenson kept getting first down gains, whether it's second down, third down. And then the next play, they barely used him. Then they started using Henderson. And then they used him again, and he had some success. But then it got to a point where it was almost too late for him to have an impact. And I think you saw Matt Collins was probably the most productive receiver. And of course, I think their best players were both Charles Woodson and Christian Gonzalez. But I was really disappointed with their offense. I think, you know, we've seen May enough times this year show he can do it. Of course, he was one vote off winning MVP, and there's a reason for that. He had a great regular season. We just didn't see it in the playoffs. We didn't see it at all in this game. And I thought the O-line really struggled. It really struggled so much. And I think it's a learning curve. And I think, you know, Mike Vrabel is a great coach. And I think, he got it wrong. There was a fourth down in the third quarter. They could have gone for it. I think, if I'm honest, Even with the struggles, I do believe that they were maybe just outplayed. I think they were just the Seahawks were the better team this season, but also in the game. And I think, so learning curve. It's a young squad, young quarterback, only a second league season in the league. Then you have to be wary, of course. Dan Marino in his second year made a Super Bowl, never returned. So you just never know when that chance might happen again. Lou, what was your take on the overall performance of this Patriots offense?
By the way, nobody's actually mentioned this, but the Patriots in the regular season played, I think it was 11 teams that fired their head coach.
Well, that's
unprecedented, isn't it?
You know? I want to bring in the stats. So the Patriots played two teams 12. All year with winning records, only three teams in total who made the playoffs, and all the first five teams picking in the draft played the Patriots last year. I think it's 7 in the first 11 or 11 in the first 15 picks. Our team to play the Patriots. And how often do you get a chance to play a backup quarterback in the conference championship?
Absolutely.
For me, absolutely. That's unheard of. That's why I do believe, I've said it all year long, all month long, it's the easiest route to Super Bowl in history.
Oh, absolutely. And I actually felt like the Patriots were almost in the Super Bowl by default because of Bo Nix's injury. No disrespect to the Patriots, right? You're still a pretty good team, and you're a young team as well. But I felt like they were probably ahead of schedule. I think you're probably right about the running game. They should have stuck with the hot hand. They really should have, especially in a Super Bowl situation. I think there's no excuse, and I thought that was a terrible, terrible call from the offensive side. I really felt like they were initially looking like they were making progress. But then I suppose in the dynamics of the game, you do have your game plan. But I think there's a lot more to come. I mean, I do feel like I said, that they've got some O-line issues that they need to solve. And they may well take a bit of a regression next year on that basis unless they sort that out, because I don't think what they can do is sustainable. But really, they were a major disappointment in the Super Bowl. And part of that was the Seahawks shutting them down and basically not giving them any options at all and not giving Drake May any time on the ball. I mean, the poor lad never get any peace. But, I think if I was a Patriots fan, I'd be a little bit disappointed just with how it played out, because I think you probably would legitimately expect more, particularly from your run game, which has been successful all year. And also just the protection on Drake May was terrible, really terrible. And I think that those are the two things that I think if I was a Patriots fan, I'd be really, really disappointed with. And probably if I was watching it again, I would think, what were they actually thinking about there? Why didn't they make adjustments sooner? All that sort of stuff. But to take nothing away from them, it's a great achievement getting there, even if they had an earlier and an easier schedule, I should say. It's still impressive to get to a Super Bowl. And I'm obviously spitting feathers as a Bears fan that I'm not there. But ultimately, getting to a Super Bowl is nothing to be sneezed at all. It doesn't matter if it's an easy or hard route, it's still getting there. And they're ahead of schedule as well. So there's a lot to be positive about, but disappointing in that moment. And maybe a few poor calls offensively from them that they may go back and think, oh, what were we thinking about at the time? I mean, that's certainly my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, the Patriots, season for the ages, not for the ages, but a season I'll look back on with a lot of fondness. They actually became the first team in history who originated from the American Football League to reach 600 lifetime wins. And I want to credit friends of the show, Sky Pank and Shane Brennan, both Patriots fans who've been on the show a lot of times, both got to see their team in a Super Bowl in the press box as well, so they got to experience that. So for them, the team might have lost, but they got to see their team in a Super Bowl and work at it as well. And I think for the Patriots, they got to be a bit wary next year of the runners-up Super Bowl hangover, because their schedule next year is definitely not easy. They've got to play the Bills twice, the Broncos, the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Steelers, the Jags, the Packers, the Bears, the Lions, and the Seahawks. And then one of the team based on, they haven't announced who that other team yet is. But that's going to be a real test. I think, the way I see it, I think with that schedule right now, I don't see them making the playoffs, because I do think there's a lot of issues there. And also, they did have an easier schedule last year. But if they can go out and win 10 wins again, then I think that if they can do that next season, that for me is a real sign of, this is the team for the future. But right now, I don't know, because of how much they struggled in that big game. Before we go on to our prediction, Steve, what was your take on the Patriots' offensive struggles?
Yeah, I think you highlighted it there about the running game. I mean, my favourite stat of the Super Bowl is that the Patriots offense managed 79 running yards and Bad Bunny did 122.5. That for me told me everything I need to know about that Patriots run game. But we were watching it in the pub and I picked up on this straight away. When they're doing pre-game and they're doing stuff in the locker room, and you look at the two kind of like competing locker rooms, and you look at the two quarterbacks and see Darnold, and Darnold is sitting there, he's with his teammates and he's chatting away and he seems fine, and May is kind of he's by himself. The body language is closed, it's nervous, it's, and I said before the game started, that doesn't look like a guy who has the confidence to win the Super Bowl. He's going in there nervous, he's going in there almost afraid of the occasion, and that definitely showed. The best description of it is May went into that game and he was Sam Darnold at the Jets level and nervous. I'm not saying he was seeing ghosts, but he didn't have that confidence as O-line. If you watch the two quarterbacks, Darnold was very rarely, you kind of shut Darnold on the sidelines. You didn't have to very often. But when you saw May, right, and you saw that team and it was down, it was like 3 points, 6 points, 9 points. I want to see a quarterback on the sideline who's shouting at his teammates, who's pushing his teammates, who's driving his teammates. And I saw a quarterback who sat there like this the whole game, holding on nervously, waiting to be told what he had to do by his coach, right? Mm. And I think that's a young quarterback. This is me in like his second year. He will learn from this. He will get better from this. There have been so many like games this season where you looked at it and went, That is a guy with massive potential, and that is a developing quarterback who is developing quickly. Next season, it'll be about whether or not he bounces back from this. Next season's about his resilience, right? Because that was a bad game. And it will, you know, you lose a Super Bowl, you carry it with you. Any quarterback who's been a Super Bowl and lost, especially in that manner, will tell you, I didn't perform to the best of my ability in that. But a lot of the guys around him didn't play. You quoted the Will Campbell stat there. It doesn't help when your O-line is a bunch of turnstiles. But
yeah,
I think next year we will see whether or not May learns from that, develops from that, and looks kind of more like a leader, which I think is what he needs to do with that team. Because that team, the body language, not just of May, but of the guys around him, it was kind of shoulders down. It was looking at Vrabel and the coaches and going, what do we do, coach? What do we do next? It wasn't that kind of like, I am going to go out there and I'm going to take this by the scruff of the neck and I am going to make those plays. And I think that's where the big difference was in the terms of the two offenses.
I mean, there's lots of similarities between this Patriots team and the one that, you know, Luke's Bears beat, you know, heavily beaten. A lot of they shouldn't have been there. I think a lot of people feel like it should have been the Dolphins against the Bears that year. And I think a lot of people felt that it should have been the Broncos with how what happened with Bo Nix or even the Bills, because Bills would have, I think, beaten the Patriots on that day. So, yeah, I think there's lots of similarities there. And also Drake May has to be careful, because we've seen a lot of quarterbacks make a Super Bowl and never return. Cam Newton's won, Matt Ryan's won, Jimmy Garoppolo's won. And there's a lot of quarterbacks who, they get there, and sometimes they get a new contract because they made a Super Bowl, and that's on their CV, and then they never return. So, yeah, just because you got there once, and Dan Marino is a perfect example of this, doesn't mean you're going to come back. But there we are. We're going to go into our predictions now, where we're going to go for each of our picks we gave before the season started, and we're going to run through who got what and eventually who is the champion of this NFL season predictions. So,
come on.
We're going to divisions first, and we're getting a point for each correct standing prediction in each division. So starting off with the AFC East, it finished in the end with the Patriots winning it, with the Bills in second, the Dolphins in third, and the Jets in fourth. Now, first up with me, the Bills were my division winners, and I had the Dolphins second, the Pats third, and the Jets fourth. So that's 1 point for Andy. Whereas Luke went for a Bills, Pats, Dolphins, Jets. He got 2 points for getting the Dolphins and the Jets in the right place. And then Steve went for a Bills, Pats, Jets, Dolphins AFC. So he gets 0 points for that. Moving on to the AFC North.
Did I got the division winner? Wait, why 0 points for that?
You had the Bills winning it, mate.
Oh, no, sorry, the Bills, didn't I? Okay.
You suck.
Yeah.
You suck.
Yeah, okay. I thought this was the Dolphins' kind of down season. I thought the Jets might improve. Yeah, okay. I'll hold my hands up on that one. That's, you know, that is on me.
AFC North had the Pittsburgh Steelers winning it with the Ravens in second, Bengals in third, and Browns in fourth. Now, in the terms of the AFC North, I had the Ravens winning it with the Bengals, then Steelers, then Browns. So 1 point for me for correctly guessing the Browns place. Luke gets 0 points. He had a Ravens, Bengals, Browns, and Steelers AFC North prediction. And Steve gets a point for correctly predicting the Browns position, whereas he had, like me, a Ravens, Bengals, Pittsburgh Steelers first three. AFC South.
You suck, Campbell.
Tell me something I don't know.
Well, I get 0 points to the AFC South, as I went for a Texans division win, then the Jags, then the Titans, and then the Colts, who for a while is looking horrendous pick at one point, the Colts being bottom. They've ended up finishing third, and it was in the end a Jags, Texans, Colts, Texans, sorry, Titans, 1-4. Luke gets 2 points as he incorrectly guessed Texans winning it, and the Jags being second, but he did correctly guess the Colts in third and the Titans in fourth. Whereas Steve gets all 4 points. He correctly predicted the Jags, Texans, Colts, Titans, AFC South.
I had that feeling from the start of the season, that was just because I have a friend who's a really massive Jags fan, and he was so positive going into this season. And it just rubs off, because he was telling us at the camp and the confidence of the players, and I could see who they picked up in free agency, and I was like, that is a team on the rise.
They certainly were. Great season for them. they missed field also. They had a missed chance to win the AFC.
I still think they should have beat the Bills. I really think they should have beat the Bills.
Yeah, and I think they would have beaten the Texans and the Broncos if they had the backup quarterback at that point. AFC West was, in the end, for the first time since 2014, not the Chiefs winning it, as the Broncos secured the AFC West with the Chargers second, the Chiefs in third with just six wins, and the Raiders in fourth. So in his predictions, Steve gets 2 points as he went for a Broncos division win, as well as the Chiefs, then the Chargers, and then the Raiders. He gets 2 points for that. Luke went for a Chiefs, Broncos, Chargers, and Raiders, so he gets 1 point for the Raiders. As do I for predicting the exact same 1-4. Moving on to the NFC East. I went for a Commanders division win.
That is the list of, that was your hot take for the year, was it?
No, we'll get on to that later on. It was Eagles winning it for the first time back-to-back. The teams won that division since 2004. Cowboys second, Commanders third, and the Giants fourth. We all have the Giants finishing fourth, so we all get a point then. Oh no, I get a point. What am I on about? I did get a point. Okay, I got 1 point for that, for getting the Giants. Where Steve and Luke both get 2 points for guessing Eagles, Commanders, then Cowboys, and then Giants. Moving on to the NFC North, it was a 0 points all round for us in this division. We all, me and Steve.
I don't care. I don't care. We won.
It was the Bears winning that division, with the Packers second, Vikings third, and Lions fourth, but shocked to everyone. Me and Steve went for a Lions division win, and Luke went for a Vikings division win. So in the end, I went for Lions, Vikings, Packers, Bears, as did Steve, and Luke went for a Vikings, Lions, Bears, Packers. So once again, 0 points for us there.
Fair, that was the most competitive division in football this year. Absolutely.
It was.
Well, NFC
it
really West. Was. NFC West. So NFC South. In the end, we all had the Saints finishing bottom, and that's what they did. They finished bottom with the Falcons in third, Bucks in second, and Panthers in first. No one had the Panthers winning the division.
Can't imagine why.
So I went for Bucks, Falcons, Panthers, Saints. So I get a point for the Saints. Luke went for Bucks, Falcons, Panthers, Saints. Once again, a point for Luke. And Steve gets 2 points for correctly predicting the Falcons and Saints in third and fourth, but with the Bucks winning it and the Panthers in second. And our final division is the NFC West. Right, boys.
Oh, I knew it was coming here.
We all had the Seahawks finishing bottom. We all had them finishing fourth in the NFC West. I don't know why. Why did I trust Kyler Murray over Sam? I don't know. So me and Luke get a point, and we did both go for the Rams finishing second. I did go for the Niners to win it with the Cardinals in third, as did Luke. Whereas Steve gets 0 points, as he went for a Rams, Niners, Cardinals, and Seahawks 1-4. Moving on to our predictions for the wildcard teams, this will be a point if you get your team as a wildcard team. So if you got your team in here who won their division, that's not a point. It's only if they made it as a wildcard team. And in total, there was no points for me. So I went for the Broncos, Bengals, and Dolphins as my three AFC wildcard teams. Luke also gets 0 points as he went for Bengals, Broncos, Jags, of course, two of those being division winners. And then Steve gets a point as he went for a Bengals, Chiefs, and Chargers AFC divisional rounds, so AFC wildcard teams. And we all get a point in the NFC wildcard predictions. I did go for the Eagles, Rams, and Vikings as my three wildcard teams, of course, the Rams being that team. Luke went for a Lions, Bears, Rams. So again, point for Luke when it comes to the Rams. And with Steve, he went for the Commanders, went for the Vikings, and went for the Niners. So he also gets a point there. Now, surprise team, bit objective, but I have got myself 0 points, and these two boys, Steve and Luke, have got 3 points. I went for the Dolphins as a surprise team. Of course, we all know how that went. They weren't miles off making the playoffs. They were only two games back, I think it was. But 3 points both for Steve and Luke as they went for the Jaguars as their surprise team. Of course, a team that won their division, could have easily won that playoff game and made potentially won the AFC. Flop team, only one of us gets a point. I went for the Bears and Luke went for the Steelers. So no one gets a point then. and then Steve gets a point for predicting the Dolphins because they ended the season somewhat strongly. If the way that first 6 weeks were going, I would have had that have been a 3 points for Steve. But the end of the season stopped him getting 3 points. Now the first overall pick, no one got it, but only one of us had a team with the same amount of wins as the team who got the number one overall pick, which was the Raiders. I went for the Saints. Steve went for the Browns, but Luke did go for the Titans, who had the same amount of wins as the Raiders. So Luke gets a point there for his first overall pick prediction. going on now to Offensive and Defensive Rookie of the Year, Comeback Player of the Year, Offensive Player of the Year, and Defensive Player of the Year, as well as MVP. These will all be predicted by, if they got a nomination, they get a point. If they get the correct, if they were the winner of the award, they get 3 points. So Offensive Rookie of the Year, we all get no point because we all went for Ashton Jeanty as our winners of that award. Defensive Rookie of the Year, we all got a point and we all went for Abdul Carter and he was a nominee for Defensive Rookie of the Year. Comeback Player of the Year, myself and Steve both get a point, whereas Luke gets zero. As Luke predicted Bradley Chubb, which I love that pick, and don't keep an eye on socials, by the way, that is coming on the socials, my interview with Bradley Chubb. But I went for Aiden Hutchinson Comeback Player of the Year, and Steve went for Trevor Lawrence. Both of them were nominees. They both get a point for that. We all get no points once again, this time for Offensive Player of the Year. None of them were nominees. None of them won it. I went for Jefferson. Luke went for Jamar Chase. And Steve went for Saquon Barkley. So in Defensive Player of the Year, both myself and Luke went for Aiden Hutchinson. Again, he was a nominee for Defensive Player of the Year. Steve, however, predicted Myles Garrett. And he is the man who won that award. So Steve gets 3 points for that one.
Congrats, man. Well done.
Moving on to our MVP pick. Sorry, Steve. Yeah.
No, I felt Garrett should have won it last year. And he's just one of these guys that I'm really pleased for him. Not just that he won it, but that he broke the sack record. Because, you know, he wanted out of Cleveland. No one would pay the price for him because he is like an elite level talent. So he kind of sat back and went, I will just make the best of the situation. Just give me the money and I will play out my career here. And he busted his ass in a terrible Browns team to get that record. So,
yeah, I mean, me and Luke both laughed at Steve for predicting a guy to have the defensive player of the year, but also have a team with the first overall pick. But, you know, they had 5 wins.
Wasn't far off.
You weren't far off, to be fair. Myles Garrett, fair play to him, broke the sack record. By far the easiest one. Out of all the ones when NFL Honors came about, when they were going for all the awards, who could win it, that was by far the easiest one to predict. By far. That was the most locked in, dead set of an award to win. Talking awards, MVP, which was won, of course, by Matthew Stafford. Congrats to him. No one here got points. Steve went for Joe Burrow, whereas myself and Luke went for Lamar Jackson. And none of them were nominees. None of them won the award. Now, basically, there's no points for the rest of the predictions. We all got no points for AFC, NFC, and Super Bowl winners. So in the
we
AFC,
suck. We suck.
We do suck collectively.
Some of us suck less than others.
And we'll find out in a minute. AFC-wise, both Steve and Luke went for the Ravens to win the AFC, and I went for the Chiefs. Not a single one of those teams made the playoffs. Whereas in the NFC, Steve and Luke went for the Eagles. Again, they made the playoffs but didn't win a game. And I went for the Lions to win the NFC. So all round, not great. And then, of course, going on to the Super Bowl winner, I went for the Chiefs. Luke went for the Ravens. Steve went for the Eagles. So no points all round. That means it's time to reveal the winner of this year's Across the Pod predictions. I believe this is our fifth year of doing these predictions. In third place with a
drum roll, please.
10 points. Is me. I think Yeah, not my finest year. Some horrendous picks. No picks really there that really I'm proud of at all. I didn't get 3 points for any of them. The only one really was not predicting a Rams division win, but no, there's been some horrific ones, and yeah, not my finest year for predictions. Which means time to who has won, and there is just 7 points between first and second. Actually, that sounds like more than just. The winner is with 22 points compared to 16 for second place is. Oh, Steve McGuinness. Steve is our champion of this year's roster pod predictions. Thank you for everyone playing along. And thank you, boys, once again for making your predictions. Before we do go, a bit of a more of a sentimental part of the show, which I've not actually told you guys we're doing this. Your highlight of the year. Is there a moment or a game or is there something for you guys that stands out for you as your favourite moment of this season? Luke, we'll go to you first.
So there's actually two, but the one that I'm going to pick is the win over the Packers with that throw. That was unbelievable. Like, literally unbelievable. The one to DJ Moore. Oh, my gosh. Talk about heart attack Bears this year, but that was unbelievable. It really was. Just to win the game was amazing. The only reason I'm not choosing the other moment, which you know about, which is the one with Caleb throwing that ridiculous throw, was just because it's great to beat the Packers. It's so good to beat the Packers, and it was so good to stick it up them more than anything. So that was my moment of the year, and I was just loved it. Come on.
Do you think maybe if you'd won that game against the Rams, maybe that would have maybe tipped you over the edge, do you think, maybe, of picking that?
Yes, probably. I mean, there's no disgrace in getting beat by the Rams. It was a great game, and you know, honestly, it was unbelievable. But yeah, probably would have tipped it in that one, or it certainly would have made it more 50-50, but beating the Packers like that was just amazing. And it was really something, really something.
And beat them twice in the same season, and you know, did end a 15-year playoff win drought in that game. Steve, over to you for your highlight of this NFL season.
So I know there's been a lot of kind of individual plays and you know, wins here and there, but for me, and this is a neutral's point of view, on the 26th of October, yeah, there was a Bengals home game against the Jets. Does anyone remember this? And we were sat watching it, the three of us sitting watching it, right? And the Jets put up like 30-odd points on the Bengals at home. And we were like, wow, the Bengals are trash. And then you know, the Bengals kind of came back. They got it to like they were 38, 36 ahead with like less than a minute left. And a friend of mine who's a Bengals fan said at this point, says, we're still going to find a way to lose this game. And the Jets went down the field and scored a field goal with time expiring for a 39-38 win. And if anything summed up the Bengals season, it was that game. They were scoring points for fun, and yet they still couldn't win. And that game, it was just so much fun to watch as a neutral. And it's games like that that really are what make the league for me. You know, and it was, I mean, that's the it's a Jets team that, you know, it's not a good Jets team. But again, it's a Bengals team that's just, it's so one-sided. It's such a high-powered offense. It's such a trash defense. And that's shootouts like that. I love watching them. When you're sitting watching Red Zone with your friends on a Sunday evening, you got the snacks and the drinks out, and you're just, you know, Scott's on there telling you, we've got another score in this game. We've got another score in this game. And it just keeps cutting back to it. And you're like, I love that kind of game. And that, for me, was the highlight of the season. That was the game where I was like, we just stood there in disbelief at the end going, what have we just watched?
I feel like this season, more than ever, was a season like that. I think, in terms of regular season, I think the best I've ever witnessed is probably the season. Been so many games that have, you know, have stunned you, you know, back and forth. You know, and I did think about my moment of the year being that Packers-Bears wildcard game, watching it with my family. You mentioned, Steve, about watching it with friends. That was certainly up there, watching it with my mum and dad. My mum not knowing what was going on. But for me, my moment has to be, it's a bit of a personal one. It's had no real benefit on the season, but Santiago Bernabeu, Madrid's first ever NFL game, being there, historic venue, working at it, but then covering my team for the first time in my time doing media, getting to interview the players, getting to go to their post game, but also in my eighth attempt, finally seeing my team win in person. You know, I've seen us lose in London. I've seen Tua get concussed in Cincinnati. I've seen us lose in Miami twice. Seen us lose in New York. Seen us lose in LA and Philly. But finally, even though it wasn't a pretty win and we found ways to make it hard for ourselves and we did go to it as a favourite, to see that moment when Riley Patterson in overtime, or actually, first of all, when Jack Jones got the interception, but then I'm sitting there and you can find this on socials, my reaction to that win. I did record myself. But just to be there in one of the best football stadiums, the stadium that I've grown up, you know, watching Champions League games in, you know, watching on TV, watching, you know, last-minute winners from Hostel in recent years. In years gone by, watching Yossi Benayoun score winner there. A lot of memories in that stadium for a different sport. Growing up with that stadium being iconic, and to be there in person at that venue and to see my team win for the first time in person was amazing, and that was a great weekend.
Love it.
So on that note, so a shout out to our friend Doug. Now Doug he's kind of replaced you on the couch over here. Look, he's joined the Sunday crew.
Yeah.
Doug came to watch the game with us on Sunday, and he just, as he was going out, he casually mentions, "Oh, I'm just flying out to Spain." Doug's a Dolphins fan, and he was like, "I'm just checking with the boss if I can get time off." It was like, with a week to go, he has suddenly secured a ticket for the Dolphins game in Madrid.
Nice.
And we were like, "Well, that's incredible." And it's like, yeah, but he had no flights booked, no anything. So like, he hadn't even asked the boss for time off. So he had to ask the boss for half day so he could get a late flight on the Friday to get to Manchester and get his connecting flight to be in Madrid on the Sunday. So
love it.
Fair play to Doug. I mean, that was his first game, his first NFL game, period. Obviously, he got to watch his team, and he got to watch his team win in, like you say, one of the ugliest games we'll all watch, but at the end of the day, a win's a win.
Exactly, and that's the most important thing. But there we are. That is the end of the episode and the end of the series. Luke and Steve, first of all, thank you for coming on today and also coming on throughout this season.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Honestly, it's always great fun to record these.
Absolutely, 100%. Thanks for having us. It's always great to hang out and talk football.
Exactly. It's obviously not this year for you, Luke, but it was great seeing you, Steve, in person, you and Chris in London. Had why still stand as the best ever stake in my life. That was incredible this year. But no, thank you for everyone who has stayed tuned along the way. We are going to have a minimum month break, as we always do after the season ends. But we are back. We've got some more top 10 episodes planned with former guests of the show. So keep an eye out for that. But you know, other than that, thank you to everyone who's made this season amazing. We covered our second Super Bowl this year, did our first games abroad in the likes of Madrid and Berlin. I did the London game, did Dublin as well with that. And that is, you know, that is all down to you guys who've been sharing the podcast, liking the content on socials, because without those, that engagement, without those likes and shares, I wouldn't be sitting in this position having done all this stuff this year. So yeah, huge thank you to everyone who's come on the show, who's listened, who's shared. And yeah, looking forward to bringing you more exciting stuff next season. Don't forget, we did interview Ryan Leaf on Radio Row last week. So if you haven't yet checked that out, do, because it's an interesting chat about his career, about his off-the-field problems, about his struggles in the NFL, and also his what his golf handicap is. So do check out that. But in the meantime, this has been the Across the Pod NFL podcast with, as ever, your host today and this season, Andy Davis. With our guests today in Steve McGuinness and Luke Campbell. And we'll see you guys for our next series. Take care.